course. Declan's shoulders relaxed and he glanced at Cormac before turning back to her. We have to go and there isn't much time. Can you strip all these wanted posters down before the Padraig see? She glanced down the alleyway and sucked in her breath.
Of course. Of course, Declan. Be well, all three of you.
I'm grateful, Rowan. Then Declan gave his brothers a grim look and nodded. Home, Cormac said. And then they were gone.
Chapter 27. Megan. Megan's whole body trembled as she stood with her back pressed flat against the wall, paralyzed in the darkness. She was out of time. Heavy boots pounded against the floorboards. She knew it wouldn't take her aunt and uncle long to find her, but she barely knew where she was in the world and her hiding spots were limited. Another minute and this would be over. She would be over. 15 minutes earlier, she'd tilted herself out of that wretched alleyway, just as she'd done to get out of Riley's grasp. But that first escape had only required her to move several feet away. This time she had gone farther, and it had taken everything in her to pull it off. Now her body felt like jello. Worse, jello that needed another hour to set.
Get it together, girl.
She curled her fingers around the iron rod in her hand. It was the only weapon she could find, and it had worked once before. She only needed enough energy for one good swing. If they split up to search, if she only had to deal with one of them at a time, if she timed her swing right, maybe, just maybe, she'd survive this. The pounding footsteps got closer. They were moving fast. The door flew open, and a man's body exploded into the room. Megan took a deep breath, stepped away from the wall, and swung for the head. The man jerked and dropped to the ground, but not from contact. His reflexes were too sharp, or she'd been too slow. Meanwhile, the force of her swing knocked her off balance. The fireplace poker flew from her hand and thudded heavily against the floor. The man was already on his feet, his hands clutching her shoulders. She screamed bloody murder.
"Sweet Danu,"
he murmured. It was a familiar voice. Large hands slid from her shoulders and down her arms. Then she was yanked against something solid and incredibly warm.
"Mac?"
His arms came around her so tightly she could barely breathe.
"Sweet Danu,"
he repeated. More feet raced down the hallway, and then another voice came from the hallway.
"Holy shit!"
Someone flipped on the light. Declan bent to pick up the fireplace poker and deadpanned.
"I see we've determined her weapon of choice."
"You okay, brother?"
Aiden asked.
"I am now."
"Christ, Megan, what the fuck happened to you?"
She couldn't answer him. All she could do was jump into his arms. She wrapped her arms around his neck, her legs around his hips. She clung to him as if he was a life preserver and she was lost at sea.
"Megan,"
he said on an exhale. Then his mouth crashed down on hers. She opened for him on a sigh and vaguely heard the sound of his brother's amused retreat, followed by the soft click of his bedroom door closing behind them. Now alone, the kiss went wild. All mouths, tongues, teeth, hands. He bit her neck, and she returned the urgency of his lust with a nip at his ear. Cormac walked her across the room, to the wall with the windows. Her back came up against the surface, and he pressed into her. His fingers came to the edge of her leather skirt and inched it up over her thighs. Then, while his tongue did something sinful against her lips, his hands cupped her ass and lifted. She tightened her legs around his hips and caged him in.
"Why did you leave without us?"
he asked, breaking the kiss.
"I didn't mean to,"
she said, panting against his mouth. He tucked his head against her neck and nipped at her skin.
"Was it because of what I said? You scared me. The Black Castle is in town."
"It's my aunt." She returned the bite and reveled at the soft growl that rumbled through his chest.
"Except, I don't know why I keep calling her that. She's not really my aunt."
"What?" Megan opened her eyes and found him staring at her. His eyes were as heated as she felt.
"She's here. I didn't have a choice. They tried to grab me, so I tilted."
Cormac's eyes went hard. And you landed here? I knew I wasn't ready to travel too far. She paused, and he ground himself against her to get her talking again. It wasn't a good tactic, given it made it hard to breathe. But there were only a couple places I could picture in my mind. It was either here or the clothing store. The corners of Cormac's mouth curved up. He kissed her again, then spoke against her lips.
You are amazing. But you should have called me as soon as you were safe.
I threw my phone away, she whispered, her lips moving against his. He nodded.
Right. Why?
There's a tracking device in it. Cormac's head jerked back, and Megan felt her eyes go wide with regret. I'm so sorry, Cormac. I told her you weren't with me, that I've been traveling alone, but she must know where I've been. So she knows about this house. I shouldn't have come back. As soon as I got here, I knew it was a mistake. They'll be here soon. Cormac reached between them, slipped his fingers into the gusset of her panties, and tore them clean away.
She can't find our house.
Megan gasped as the feel of his shirt disappeared under her fingers, and she felt the blunt tip of him against her opening. Cormac, she can.
She can't. Our house has a charm on it. It isn't detectable by Podrigs.
He tweaked her nose.
Full-blooded ones, at least.
A charm? She blinked twice, and he smiled sadly at her.
Our father won it in a card game before he died. Unfortunately, it was delivered too late to help him.
But she's hunting for you.
We knew they would be. This is not a surprise.
Now, hold still. Without preamble, Cormac thrust upward, his thick cock stretching her pussy. Oh my God.
Megan, look at me.
She did, and her heart stuttered at the sight of his eyes burning into hers. Something was happening. Something huge. He was confident she was his fated mate, his Anamkara, but this was something else. If she had to guess, it was the sense of intent. He had no choice in who was meant for him, but now he was choosing her, making her his. He moved smoothly, in and out, building the friction, torturing her and soothing her with every stroke.
And something good has come of it, he said.
She was finding it difficult to concentrate on the conversation, but she knew everything that he was saying was important, so she did her best to follow along. What are you talking about? Cormac thrust in and ground against her clit. He put his nose to her neck and inhaled.
I can smell her on you.
Oh, God, no. This was the last thing she wanted to hear. The very thought of her aunt being anywhere near Cormac made her stomach turn. She twisted in his arms and leaned to get away. I need to take a bath. His hands left her ass, and he pressed her against the wall as he pulled the two layers of t-shirts up and over her head. His finger traced the edge of the lace that cupped her breasts.
No, it's good, don't you see? I can track her now.
I'll go with you.
You won't.
Cormac pressed his mouth against hers. She got the strong feeling it was to stop her argument before it began. She was irritated for only a second because his hips sent up a merciless rhythm while his tongue traced her bottom lip.
Oh, God. That's it, he said. Show me how you do it.
Cormac, wait.
I can wait. Get yourself there first.
No, listen. I know what she looks like. My uncle, too. I can help you find them.
Not this time, Makusla. You've done enough.
I thought I was your Anamkara.
You are.
She slid her hands into his hair and curled her fingers to make her point.
Your partner. Megan, this is something I have to do alone. For my family.
You said this was my family now, too.
It is, but...
Then your kill is mine. My kill is yours. It all counts. There are only two more to go for you to settle the score. That could be my so-called aunt and uncle. Even as much as Megan meant what she said, her words still left her feeling ugly inside. Her aunt and uncle's work made her sick. But still, to casually speak of their deaths, it left her wondering, was she no better than them? Cormac's gaze searched deep, and she knew he saw the conflict within her. That's why she refused to blink. Despite those feelings, she was with him. 100%. "It's a plan, then?" she asked. He didn't answer right away. She watched as the heat flooded into his eyes, and she felt that deep in her belly. Then she felt his cock graze along her clit before thrusting in again. "Cormac!" He pressed his lips to hers and whispered, "It's a plan." Then he reached between them and pressed his thumb against her clit, swirling in a tight circle. Megan threw her head back against the wall. It didn't take long before her uninhibited screams of pleasure nearly brought the house crashing down around them. Chapter 28. Megan. Megan was dreaming about her mother again, but this time it was different. This time, her mother didn't stand on a blank canvas, or even at the foot of her bed. This time she was kneeling on a rock beside a river. Her back was still turned, but Megan knew her mother was talking by the way her shoulders moved. Her words, however, were muffled by a terrible roaring sound. In the dream, Megan moved closer. Desperate to see her mother's face, to hear her words, she waded into the river, something she would never do awake, but it didn't scare her now. She let the water lap at her ankles, then her knees. The cold spread over her thighs, then climbed to her waist. She turned to face the shore and look at her mother straight on. Megan's chest squeezed at the sight of her, still so young and beautiful. She'd forgotten how beautiful she was. Her mother opened her eyes, her lids slowly lifting, and she stared deeply into Megan's soul. Her lips parted to speak again, and this time she had a lot to say. Megan heard every word, especially the first two. "Find me." Megan's eyes flew open and she gasped. Like a shot, she was out of bed and racing across the hall and into the library, where she knew she'd find paper and pen. She yanked out a drawer, then quickly wrote down all that she heard. If she wasted another second, her mother's message would be gone, and it felt too important. Too real. She fumbled the pen in her shaking hand before writing it, then scribbled out all of the words she heard her mother say. "Find me. I'm an eely blackness. Around you of the lee. Nancy you go took. Wish we fall. Sand and sea." Megan stared down at the paper, then blinked. Hard. Damn. Hearing the words so clearly in her sleep felt momentous and important. Seeing them now, written out in front of her, proved the dream was meaningless. She walked back to Cormac's room and realized, for the first time since waking, that he was already up. She looked to the window. It was still dark outside. With the rush of adrenaline now waning, Megan wandered downstairs and into the kitchen. Declan was up, sitting at the table with his head in his hands and four pill bottles lined up like soldiers in front of him. Three of them had their caps off. Aiden was leaning against the icebox with a book tucked under his arm, who's watching his brother with a worried expression. When Megan walked in, he looked up, his eyes widening. "Why are you up so early?" She made a hands-up shrugging gesture to say, "No idea," then sat down across from Declan. "Well, you look miserable." Aiden poured her a glass of coffee. Then he got a teasing glint in his eyes. "We thought, judging by all the ruckus last night, Cormac had helped you work everything out." Memories of last night flooded back in, and she looked up in utter mortification. She was going to have to ask Cormac about soundproofing the walls. "Don't be embarrassed," he said, giving her that sexy half-grin. "At least somebody's getting some." "Glad I wasn't the only one having trouble sleeping," Declan said in a half-teasing, half-misery-loves-company sort of way. Megan noticed the darker yellow tinge to the skin around his eyes and immediately felt an apology was in order. He needed his rest. "So," Aiden prompted, "why are you up?" "Oh," she tore her gaze from Declan, It's nothing. I just had this weird dream about my mom. She was giving me a message, and I thought it might actually mean something, but it doesn't.
How do you know?
Declan asked, cracking open the last plastic bottle and swallowing down an enormous yellow pill. Because she's dead, and the message turned out to be gibberish. She slid the paper toward him. Here, read it. I wrote it down. He shook his head.
I've got a splitting headache.
You read it. She took the paper back and glanced down at it. Don't laugh, she said. Then she read it out loud. From behind her, Aiden pulled in a breath and slid the coffee pot back into place. She turned to look at him and found his brows were drawn together in concentration. When she looked back at Declan, his expression was the same.
Read it again, he said.
Megan tightened her mouth in irritation. No.
Read it.
Why? It's stupid.
Megan.
Aiden took her coffee away and said warningly,
We have ways of making you talk.
She rolled her eyes while inhaling slowly through her nose. Fine, but this is the last time. Aiden rewarded her by returning her cup, and she cleared her throat. Find me. I'm in Ely Blackness, around you of the Lee. Nancy, you go took, wish we fall, sand and sea. She slapped the paper down on the table to express her irritation. The more times she read it, the more ridiculous she felt. Declan stared at her for a second, glanced quickly at his brother, then back to her.
And you don't think that means something?
All this means is that I had a scary night with the Black Castle, tilted way farther than I was ready for, thought I was being attacked in Cormac's room, and then... Well... She let the sentence dangle. They'd unfortunately heard the rest of last night for themselves. It all must have fucked with my subconscious. Declan snapped his fingers at Aiden, who, somehow understanding, grabbed a pen and paper from a drawer and handed them over.
Okay, Curly, Declan said. Read it again.
Oh, come on, she complained, or more like whined. It was definitely a whining moment. She was tired, hungry, and now had a bad feeling they were making fun of her. She'd always wanted siblings who'd give her a nickname, but maybe having brothers wasn't as great as she'd imagined. Just do it, Aiden said,
and go slow.
Declan added. Fine, whatever, Jesus. She cleared her throat and read the words again. This time, Declan wrote them down as she spoke. When she finished, he turned his paper 180 degrees and slid it toward her. Find me. I'm in Ely. Blackness around you of the Lenan Shi. Go to Kawishawi Falls and see.
What? How did he do that?
She looked at her paper again, but this time anew. Kawishawi Falls?
They're about 15-20 miles west of here and just a bit east of Ely.
Megan read her paper again, this time side by side with Declan's. Was it possible?
Listen, sweetheart, I don't know what, if anything, you'd find at the falls other than hikers, but you were dressed in all black last night like the Lenan Shi. Whatever the dream means, if your mum is behind it. She thinks it's time for you to find out.
Megan glanced up and her eyes went wet. My mom's dead. Declan shrugged, but Aiden moved closer and leaned one hand on the table.
Your mom was a Lenan Shi. They work through dreams. That's their M.O.
Yeah, but from the grave? She asked.
I don't know about that, Aiden admitted. There could be another Lenan behind it,
Declan added.
Or it could just be a dream and mean nothing at all.
There was a thud in the back hall, and they all turned to look. Cormac came in, his hair wet and his hands dirty. His eyes locked on hers, and his guilty expression made her nervous.
Where have you been?
She asked. Cormac's mouth got tight, and he looked away. Without saying anything, he crossed the kitchen and grabbed a coffee mug. Megan got to her feet, a sudden sense of alarm washing over her.
Where were you?
Still silence.
Declan, Aiden said. I think maybe we should go check the furnace.
Time to change the filters,
He agreed, rising from his chair. No, Megan said sharply. Sit. Then she turned to Aiden. Stay.
Woof, muttered Declan.
Aiden slowly lowered his ass back onto a chair. You were out all night, weren't you? Megan said, wheeling on Cormac. Hunting. You were looking for my so-called aunt and uncle.
He closed his eyes, exhaled, and turned to face her.
I'm not going to have those vile creatures prowling around my family. We talked about this. You agreed. We had a plan.
I agreed it was a plan, but it wasn't the plan.
She blinked and felt the rage rising in her chest. You're arguing semantics?
I'm not arguing anything. You need to let me handle this.
He turned his back on her and grabbed the coffee pot. You wanted my help. Right from the beginning, you wanted that from me.
He nodded and poured a cup.
And you did help. You're pissed about that. That's what this is about, am I right? You're pissed that I killed that guy and didn't let you do it.
No!
Cormac set the cup down hard on the counter and the coffee sloshed over the side. He turned, his face looking as pained as it did just moments before he turned into the hound.
No. He exhaled. I'm not mad. There was no other way out of that situation.
Megan threw her hands up. I can't believe this. I have to go to a completely different species for the perfect guy, and it's still the same old misogynistic bullshit.
Don't lay that on me. That's not what this is about, and you know it.
Oh, do I? Fuck, Megan. What do you think would happen to me if something bad happened to you? Well, we're going to find out one way or another, Cormac. I've only got about 60 years left. That is, if I don't get in a car accident or hit with cancer or any other million things.
We don't know what kind of lifespan your halfling status will offer. I'd like the chance to find out, and that means you staying here. Safe.
This is unbelievable. If you want to work alone, fine. Two can play at that game. She picked up the papers, folded them, and shoved them in her back pocket.
Megan,
Aiden warned. She gave him a hard look. Can I use your laptop?
It's in the library.
She nodded. She'd seen it there earlier. Then she grabbed a banana from the bowl of fruit on the table and marched out.
Wait,
Cormac said, reaching toward her as she passed. She dodged around his hand and stomped off for the stairs.
What were those papers?
She heard him ask his brothers.
Maybe if you'd been here, you'd know, was Declan's snarky response.
When she got up to the library, she closed the door and sat at the desk where Aiden's laptop was charging. With a calming breath, she unfolded Declan's paper to check her spelling and typed in her first search. Ely, Minnesota, Kowishawi Falls.
Chapter 29. Cormac. It had been 2 hours since Megan stormed out of the kitchen, and the sun was starting to rise. Cormac was getting more and more agitated the longer this went on. He had hoped her anger would have subsided by now. Apparently, she was going to make him suffer. He knew he deserved it. Still, if he had to do it again, he wouldn't change a thing. The three brothers had moved to the sitting room and were doing just that, side by side on the couch. Cormac had glamoured dry clothes on, but the ends of his hair were still damp from the rain. Aiden was reading his book. Declan had his right ankle resting on his left knee. His foot jiggled with restless energy as he watched vintage footage from a 1986 football game. Bears versus Patriots. Every few minutes, Cormac looked up toward the ceiling, feeling the distance between himself and Megan like it was a tangible thing. The need to be with her clawed at his insides as much as his hound. His brothers had explained the message from Megan's dream, and now Cormac's belly twisted with adrenaline. Finally, he could stand it no longer, and he suddenly pushed to his feet, announcing, "I'm going to the falls." Both brothers looked up at him. "Now?" Aiden asked, closing his book. Cormac pulled his hair back and fastened it at the nape of his neck. "Now." "And what do you expect to find?" Declan asked, leaning back into the corner of the couch. "Nothing. But then I can come back and tell Megan that her dream was just a dream. That's all she needs, to know for sure. I can give that to her. Cormac headed out of the room and both brothers were quickly on his heels. He heard Aidan's book hit the replacement coffee table with a hard thwap. What you can give her is the chance to go with you, Aidan said, following him down the hallway. No. She's already pissed at you, Declan reminded him. You want to make things worse? Cormac entered the kitchen and started rustling around in the junk drawer. He pulled out a set of small keys. Aidan shook his head when he saw them. Tell me you're not serious. You can't lock her in the library. I couldn't be more serious, Cormac said. You don't know her like I do. She's reckless. If she finds out I've left again, she'll try to follow me. Cormac knew the truth of that statement like he knew his own name, and he would use that knowledge to protect her, from what was out there, and from what was inside of her. She was brave, sure, but also headstrong and impulsive, and there was still much for her to learn about the new world she'd chosen to live in. You do that and you might not have your balls by morning, Declan warned. Or her, Aidan added, and the weight of that statement sat with them in the room. Cormac gritted his teeth, then powered through. It's just for a little while, just until I get back. And I don't want either of you to let her out. Aidan threw his hands in the air. What the hell is wrong with you? If Da... Cormac shut him up with a glare. If Da had known the danger that was right outside his door, he would have shoved Mum in the cupboard with us and locked her in. He would have hidden her, protected her. He would have done anything to make sure she was safe, and you know it. Neither of them had anything to say to that. They knew he was right, and that urged him forward. Well, I now have the luxury he didn't. I know what danger is right outside our door, and I'm not going to make his mistake. Megan will forgive me. You sure of that? Aidan asked. Eventually, she will. He could explain. She'd understand once she heard him out. She had before. She would again. Listen, brother, Aidan said. I understand what you're saying, but as reckless as you think Curly is, you're no better. Cormac narrowed his eyes. Talk to her. If you'd talked to us before you left 50 years ago, maybe we wouldn't be in the position we are in now. This could have been finished a long time ago. Just think before you act, Declan added. Some things are hard to reverse. Cormac exhaled. As if sensing his advantage, Declan took the keys from his hand. Talk to her. Maybe throw in an apology for good measure, Aidan said. Cormac stared at his brothers for a beat, then slowly inhaled. He closed his eyes, releasing the breath and giving his head a nod of resignation. He knew they were right. Too often he'd acted on the impulses of his heart. It might be time to give cool reason a chance. He headed for the stairs. He probably should have taken her with him this morning. He should have proven to her that they were partners in every sense of the word. If he'd done that, there wouldn't be this emotional chasm widening between them. When he got upstairs, he glanced toward the bedroom first. Not seeing her there, he went to the library. The door was closed. He pressed his ear to the wood and listened. Nothing. Was it possible she'd fallen asleep? Maybe he should go with his original plan. He'd have the assurance that she was safe, but she would be asleep and none the wiser that she was locked in. He could be back before she woke. He knew what the right choice was, but the assurance of her safety was so enticing. He imagined her sleeping face, and he longed to leave with the image of that peaceful expression in his mind, rather than the angry one she'd given him in the kitchen. He never wanted to see that again. And that's what made his decision. Slowly, quietly, he turned the knob and pushed the door halfway open. The laptop was open on the desk and displaying a website page. The desk was littered with papers that lifted slightly in a breeze. Cormac glanced toward the window. It was open. The curtains that hung on the left side of the rod were pushed open. The curtains that hung on the right side were... missing? He pushed the door all the way open and strode inside, turning left then right. Megan was gone.
Aiden! Declan!
Cormac ran to the desk and strode for the window. The missing curtains were tied to a world globe with a heavy lead base and draped over the sill, hanging to the ground below. Aiden and Declan ran into the room from behind him.
What's going on?
She left,
Cormac said.
Fuck!
Aiden exclaimed.
What's all this?
Declan asked. Cormac turned over his shoulder and joined his brother at the desk. The computer screen showed a 20-year-old news article from the Phoenix Daily Press. The headline read, Local Prostitute Found Dead. Below that was a photograph of a woman with long blonde hair lying on the ground, her hair fanned around her head, her body in an awkward position with an arm bent in a way it should not bend. Out of propriety, the photographer had used black rectangular markings to cover the dead woman's eyes. Open beside the computer was Megan's social services file, and at the top of the stack of papers was a photograph clipped to a police report about her mother's death. The report Branna had said didn't seem quite right. The photograph she didn't think Megan should see. The file photo of Megan's dead mother was exactly the same as the photograph Megan had found online. Except the woman's hair in the file photo had been changed so that it was dark and curly.
Photoshopped?
Aiden asked, picking up the supposed photo of Megan's mother.
The photo of Megan's mum is a fake?
Fuck!
Cormac erupted and swung, putting his fist into the panelling and splintering the wood.
What did this mean?
Nothing good, that was for sure. He could think of only one person who had reason to provide child protection with evidence of Megan's mother's death so many years ago.
How would Megan even find the real photo online?
Declan asked. Aiden shook his head.
She's resourceful. Maybe she took a picture of the file photo with her phone and did an image search, or...
Declan cut him off.
But why? What does this even mean?
Cormac turned and stormed back to the window.
Megan thinks her mum is still alive.
Is she?
Aiden asked.
Alive?
Hell if I know, Cormac muttered. What else in that file might be fake? Megan was already unsteady, not knowing where she came from, what she was, where she belonged. No wonder she ran.
Chapter 30. Megan. Obviously, Megan hadn't thought this through. She had a knack for making impulsive decisions. She also had a talent for being too stubborn to admit it, and she was too proud to ever go in reverse. That's what made her shimmy down a curtain to get outside the house. That's what convinced her 2 weeks ago that jumping into some rando guy's car and heading to Canada was a good idea. Before that, it was what made her leave home and make a myriad of other decisions throughout her life that landed her in detention halls, banned her from her friends' houses, and got her kicked out of Sunday school. Not all of her impulsive decisions had been bad ones. There was no desire to reverse on Cormac, and she'd been right to leave home. Hell, there wasn't much in her past she regretted, except for her failure to plan. Planning would have made each of those decisions go a little more smoothly. Oof! She pulled up her foot and checked the back of her heel, which meant her shoes were wet, which meant she had a torn and screaming blister on the back of her heel. Grabbing an extra pair of socks before climbing out of the library window, that would have been some solid gold planning right there. At least she thought to grab her jacket. Megan gingerly slipped her shoe back on and looked down at the picture she held in her hands. It was an image of Kawishui Falls she'd found online right before she got up the nerve to open her child protection file and saw the photo that set her on this path. The falls were supposedly only 15 to 20 miles from the house. It would take all day, but she knew she could walk it. Of course, tilting would have been easier. With the current state of her feet, much easier. The problem was, she'd never been to the falls before, and she obviously couldn't see them from the McConnell's library. She thought focusing on a photograph might help, but it didn't. The first time she tried, she only moved from the desk to the window, and that kind of progress was not worth the physical exertion it took to move herself through space. So she'd fashioned a rope from the curtains and escaped, just like old times.
In high school, she'd been a master escape artist. She'd only been caught twice, her aunt and uncle grounding her both times. A memory struck her. It wasn't long after they'd mounted iron bars on the outside of her window. They said it was because there'd been a crime wave in the neighborhood. Now she wondered if they thought the iron would keep her in. Her escape skills were definitely rusty now, judging by her skinned palms, but she'd made it out without notice. She walked a mile from the house, totally prepared to walk to the falls when it occurred to her she'd been to Ely before. She could tilt there, at least, and shave off some of the distance, which was what she did. The 5-mile hike from Ely to the falls was much more manageable, though it did nothing to help her blister. She tried to ignore the pain by focusing on other things, like how she hoped it would take a while before Cormac realized she was gone. Once he did, he'd know where to look. Aiden and Declan would make sure of it. It wasn't that she didn't want him with her. She did. In fact, she felt skittish without him. But if he discovered her, he'd force her back. He'd be kind about it, but he'd be persuasive. And she couldn't afford for him to steer her around. She needed to know the truth about her mother, once and for all. She hadn't had much of it in her 21 years. She was going to insist on it from now on. Megan continued to walk in the dark, hoping she was moving in the right direction. She figured eventually she'd find a road or maybe even a trail sign. An hour later, the sun began to rise and the first muffled roar of the falls hit her ears. She took the picture from her pocket again and unfolded it. Perhaps being able to hear the water would be as good of a connection for tilting as seeing or remembering it would be. She stared down at the image of the raging cataract, the black rocks that formed the channel, and the yellow foam that churned in the basin. She closed her eyes, pictured them in her mind, let the sound fill her ears, and willed herself there. She felt just a tickle in her feet at first, then a pins and needles sensation, as if she'd had them curled under her too long while watching a marathon of diners, drive-ins, and dives. It was a slower process than the 4 times before, and she felt every bit of it, starting with the prickling that wicked up her legs, then faded to a warm fluidity, as if all her bones went liquid. She knew the worst was coming, but before she could brace herself, she was sucked into a tunnel that spun and stretched and distorted her body and senses until all she was aware of was a rushing wind, and then the violent roar of Kawishawi Falls. Megan opened her eyes and blinked. It was just like in the photo. She was on a flat, rocky plain at the top of the falls, and the rushing water broke and fell over multiple tiers of black rock before hitting the basin below. The pitted rocks under her feet were wet from the spray, and somewhere, through the near deafening sound, she thought she could hear a woman calling. Megan pulled her fleece jacket tighter around her and slowly turned, hoping to see the only woman who could fill in the gaps of the last 16 confusing years. The first thing her eyes settled on was a Lennon she in black leggings and a torn black sweater, at the edge of the woods and not 30 feet from the churning cataract. But she was not the Lennon Megan had hoped to see. In fact, the sight only served to confuse her more. The Lennon was on her knees, her face bruised, and one eye swollen shut. Her chest was bound to the trunk of a pine tree with a rusted chain, and in her lap was Megan's worn, nappy-fleeced daisy pillow. She lifted her face to stare, one-eyed, at Megan, and she mouthed the words, "I'm so sorry." "Dreams," said a woman. Megan's head jerked, and she looked from the she toward the voice. Her Aunt Darlene stepped forward from the trees, followed by her uncle and 5 strangers, all of them dressed in cloaks. "Are dangerous things." Megan staggered back a couple steps, closer to the water. "Where's my mom?" "Dead," her aunt said, continuing her advance. "And a long time ago."
"No."
"Don't worry," said her uncle. By the sound of his voice, he was still smoking 2 packs a day. "You'll join her soon."
"But the photo," Megan started, trying to understand. "Her mother wasn't dead. She couldn't be. It wasn't really her in the photo."
"True enough,"
said her aunt. But back then, the county needed proof of her death. We couldn't let a coroner near her body and learn she wasn't human. No coroner, no death certificate. It was the best we could do with little time, and frankly, the county was glad to have you off their books. Megan shook her head. It had to be another lie. But she said she was here, at the falls. Megan glanced across the faces of the five strangers who formed a line behind her aunt and uncle. Her aunt glanced over her shoulder at the beaten and chained she who was still clutching Megan's daisy pillow. She planted those dreams in your head. She's been helping us ever since you left home, though with the distance it took some time for her to break all the way through. Believe me, if there was any other way to get you back under our control, imagine my surprise when I ran into you in an alley. Megan closed her eyes and tried to tilt herself back to Cormac. She vowed she'd beg his forgiveness, tell him he was absolutely right. She should have listened. He knew better when it came to this world. But her multiple attempts and final success at tilting over the last few hours had stripped her of all her strength. She wasn't going anywhere. At least, nowhere she wanted to go. Get her, her aunt said, and this time there would be no escape.
Chapter 31. Aidan. Aidan McConnell leaned against a tree, deep in the woods near the top of Cowishewee Falls. With him were Cormac, Declan, and, he could hardly believe it, Branna, the pooka who had tormented him his entire life. By Danu, why had he agreed to this?
We need her, Declan whispered in his ear.
Damn, even sick, his brother was too fucking good at reading faces. Aidan needed to school his expression. The last thing he needed was for Branna to sense his discomfort. Though for now, she wasn't paying any attention to him. He hated to admit it, but her ambivalence was almost worse. As soon as the foursome had tilted into the woods near the falls, the three Cushi had sensed the blood. Cormac immediately lost control of his human form and lifted his head to howl in agony. Fortunately, the roar of the falls covered the sound. Branna kicked him square in the ribs anyway, and sent him flying.
One of you shut him up before he gets us all killed, she grumbled.
Declan took on that responsibility while Aidan crept closer to the outermost edge of the trees, keeping his body low to the ground. From there he could see the mangled body of Alanon She, her blood pooling in the bold indentations of the rock, an odd flower-shaped pillow by her side. Aidan's first reaction was relief that it wasn't the scent of Megan's blood that filled his nose. Then he spotted his brother's mate, and he realized that that dreaded scent was simply yet to come. Megan's ankles were bound with ropes, and she was sitting on a wooden pallet that rocked dangerously on the water. For now, it was tethered to the shore by another rope held by a large brethren of the Black Castle. All it would take would be for him to let go, and Megan would float away from the shore, then shoot over the falls. If she wasn't dashed on the rocks below, she'd be drowned. If that didn't get her, hypothermia would. In the clearing near the edge of the raging river was a stump with a bloodied hunting knife sticking out of it. On the ground beside the stump was a large navy blue box of table salt. Aidan snorted in response to the box. It was an effective but cowardly choice of weapon. Then his gaze glanced to the black-cloaked Podrigs who were standing in a circle, talking, several feet from the stump. What were they waiting for? He had a sinking feeling that he knew exactly what they were waiting for. Aidan pushed himself backward, away from the edge of the trees, before standing again. When he looked down, a black rabbit was standing on her hind legs behind him, her keen and clever eyes still fixed on the scene. Let's go, Aidan whispered as he ducked under the tree branches and strode back into the woods where his brothers waited. He felt Branna hopping after him. He thought it might have been the first time she'd let him lead. When they arrived, Cormac was flickering in and out of himself and the hound, unable to control his hold on one shape or another. Depending on his form, he raged, paced, snarled, or tore at the tree's scaly bark with every swipe of his hand. Declan was holding both of his hands up and coaching their older brother in the same deep breathing exercises Declan did under his nurse's instructions. Branna resumed her human form and did nothing to hide her irritation.
Oh, for fuck's sake! We haven't been able to control him his whole life,
Aiden said in response to her contempt. You think we're suddenly going to break through when his Anamkara is in the hands of the Black Castle? I feel for this guy as much as the next person, she said, sounding only mildly convincing. But his behavior isn't helping. Aiden didn't disagree, but he understood where his brother was coming from. Right now, his own hound was barely under control. Cormac's was shaking his head like he'd been swarmed by bees. It sent great gobs of slobber flying through the air.
Gross,
Branna muttered.
Cormac,
Aiden said, walking closer, hand extended pacifying.
It's not Megan's blood.
The hound gave his head another furious shake and, in a flash, Cormac was standing in front of them again, his expression so dark. Aiden had to take a step back.
I know that,
Cormac growled.
You think I don't know the scent of my own mate, but she's out there, isn't she?
Declan, Aiden and Branna closed in, forming a half circle around Cormac.
She's out there, Aiden said softly. But alive, Cormac. She's alive. And we're going to get her back.
His attempt at instilling calm didn't work. Cormac scowled and hunched his shoulders forward.
I need her.
We know you do, Aiden said.
Now!
We understand.
You don't. You couldn't possibly.
Aiden swallowed hard and fought the urge to glance at Branna.
Brother, calm, Declan said. What you need is a clear head if we're going to get her out of there.
Then he turned toward Aiden. How many are we dealing with? Branna answered. 7 Black Castle, 1 dead Lannon Shi, and Megan.
We're wasting time,
Cormac bellowed.
She's on a pallet at the top of the falls, Aiden said, then he clarified. On the water.
Cormac's face paled.
She's afraid of the water. They know that.
Brother, I think it's you they want. They could have killed her by now, but they're keeping her tethered to the shore. They think you'll come for her.
And they're right, Cormac growled. But it's not only Megan I'm coming for. I will kill them all. Do you hear me? I will avenge our parents, Madigan, Megan, all the Shi that they've mutilated and killed. I will have this, Aiden. They are mine, and if anyone tries to take that right from me, you go bursting out of the trees, they'll drop the rope, Megan will go over the falls and...
Branna put up her hands to stop the debate. Here's what we do, but Cormac... His eyes narrowed in response to her warning tone. You're going to have to leave instinct behind. Chapter 32. Cormac.
I don't like it, Cormac said.
He may not have been stuffed inside a cupboard, but it felt like he was hiding again.
Trust the plan,
Aiden said as the three brothers' normal attire gave way to hiking gear, wicking shirts, fleece layers, and sturdy boots. Given the day's weather and the early hour, there were no sightseers or other hikers in the area yet, but they'd come eventually. The Black Castle was taking a risk staging a scene like this at such a popular spot, and that level of desperation left Cormac feeling edgy and unbalanced. Still deep in the woods, but now from a vantage point where they could see, they watched as the cloaked Black Castle brethren paced and checked their watches, clearly more impatient than they'd been only minutes before.
Ironic, isn't it?
Aiden said.
What are you talking about?
Declan asked, his focus locked on the scene. Only that their ancestors worked so hard to rid Ireland of the Shi and all the druids, and now they go around dressed up like them. It's weird, right?
We need to hurry,
Cormac growled. He was in no mood for esoteric questions. He could feel Megan's terror despite the distance between them. Every time a wave rocked the pallet, he saw her knuckles whiten as she dug her fingers into the wood.
Hold, brother. Let Branna do her work, then we'll walk in like hikers. Get close, then shift.
You can't go racing in as a hound. They'll be expecting that.
A low rumble vibrated through Cormac's chest, but he held because, just then, Branna hopped out of the woods and onto the rocky plain. She stilled, rabbit ears erect, head lifted. When none of the Podricks seemed to notice her, she hopped closer to the box of salt.
That's it,
Declan whispered. Branna stilled again, gave the scene another review, then began to gnaw along the cardboard base along one side, then around the corner and down another.
Hurry,
Cormac muttered.
Cormac, hold,
Aidan warned. A rogue wave crashed against the boulders and rocked the pallet, sending Megan rolling to the edge. The brothers sucked in a collective breath, then let it out as she caught herself and inched her way back to the center.
Done waiting,
Cormac said, and before his brothers could stop him, he shifted.
Fuck!
Declan cried, and he and Aidan both shifted in response. 12 large paws pounded at the ground and tore up bits of moss that flew out behind them. They snaked their way through the trees, cutting left then right, before barreling into the clearing, white teeth flashing and ears laid back like bristled demons from hell itself.
Megan. Two of the Black Castle shrieked, and Megan's head jerked up just in time to see them bolt into the forest with their black cloaks flapping. A humongous wolf was close on their tails. But it was no wolf. It was also not Cormac. Megan shivered. Her clothes were soaked, her feet bound. There was nothing she could do but watch in horror as another hound burst into the clearing, red eyes narrowed to slits, hellbent on the other 5 Black Castle. When Megan's aunt grabbed the box of salt, Megan flinched. She no longer underestimated the innocuous household item when it came to subduing a member of the Shi. But when her aunt picked up the box, the bottom fell out and it emptied into the wet grass. It might have been funny had the man holding the rope to her pallet not let go. He lunged for the hunting knife stuck on the stump.
No!
Megan screamed, but her sightline was suddenly blocked by a third hellhound who was bellowing so loud, so angrily, she barely noticed her pallet breaking loose from the shore. Cormac. He leapt onto a boulder that jutted across the river and near the falls point of no return. Then he leaned out.
Cormac!
Megan cried in terror as a choppy wave splashed her already wet body. He bared his teeth and stretched his neck to reach for her as the pallet dipped and surged, moving closer to the edge of the falls, but also, thankfully, closer to the rock. Megan held on for dear life because she saw what he meant to do. Somehow he planned to snag the rope with his teeth as she went by. She wished there was something she could do to help, but the water was too choppy and any movement from her would upset the raft. Megan's cold, numb fingers dug into the edge of the pallet, and she silently prayed. He could do this. He could save her. This was Cormac. He wouldn't let anything bad happen to her. The pallet hit a wave and angled up. She closed her eyes. Any second and she'd feel the tug and know that Cormac had her and was pulling her safely to shore. She opened her eyes. Another foot to go. Cormac stretched his neck as far as he could. His lips were pulled back, his teeth exposed. Thank God, he was ready to latch onto the ropes, the raft, her, whatever he needed to do. Yes, thank God. Thank Christ. Thank Danu. But just as the pallet got into range, it was caught on the edge of an eddy and spun around. The momentum slung the raft in a different direction, away from Cormac and toward the center of the falls, 20 feet from the shore. No! Megan was headed for the brink. In seconds, she'd go over the edge. No, no, no! Help! Cormac! She twisted her neck around to see him sink back onto his haunches, building energy in his muscles. Then, before she really knew what was happening, he sprung out across the water. His legs extended, dark eyes focused. Oh, shit. Wait, no! He was going to get himself killed. There was a second when Megan felt sure time had stopped. The world went silent. The roar of the falls was gone. Then Cormac's front paws hit the pallet, and the raft flipped. Megan flew into the air, and she screamed. It was over. Really over. The cold breeze snapped at her wet skin. She floated for a second, then gravity took hold and she fell. Down, down, down. Not into the raging river, but into empty space. This was it. This was how she was going to die. Cold, wet, unable to breathe. Then dashed on the rocks, broken into a million pieces. But not alone. Somewhere out there, falling with her, was Cormac. And the sad peace of that thought was everything.
Aiden looked up from the Black Castle, who was pinned to the ground and under his paws. Declan returned to the clearing, his muzzle bloodied, his expression satisfied. Aiden huffed a question, which his brother easily interpreted with a smug curl of his black lip. He'd got both of the bastards who tried to run. Nice. For himself, Aiden had torn out the throats of three, but regrettably, one got away. The last was now under him and starting to cry. He'd saved it for Branna, who approached with the hunting knife that had been left abandoned on the ground. Her expression was flat. There would be no clever comments, no dragging this out for the sake of toying with the monster. She acted as if he was as meaningless to her as a housefly, an irritant quickly dispatched. Aiden had been on the receiving end of her blank looks before. It was not a good place to be. Fortunately, she'd never come at him with a knife. She lowered herself onto one knee, and Declan felt the man's heartbeat quicken under his paws. Then, without hesitation, regret, or repulsion, Branna drew the blade across his throat. Cormac had no thought for what was happening with his brothers. He would allow himself to feel guilty about that later, but not now. For now, all he wanted was to see Megan safe, warm and dry, and home. A split second after his hound had given him the necessary strength to leap 20 feet across the falls, Cormac had transformed into a man. Only then was he able to snag Megan's body in his arms and tilt them both away. They'd landed in the same spot where he, his brothers, and Branna had planned this outrageous attack just moments before. You should have followed the plan. But no, he'd been reckless. Now Megan's body lay across his lap. She was pale in his arms, her lips blue. Oh, sweet Danu, Makushla, please be okay. He used his palms to scan her body, touching every inch of her as he searched for injury. Are you hurt? Megan, please say something. She lay silent. Cormac kissed her cheek, blew warm air against her neck, rubbed her arms. He did everything he could think of to bring her back around. Megan, he whispered, wrapping her tighter in his arms. He willed all of his heat into her body. He rocked her, holding her, but her arms hung limp. Wake up, Makushla. Please, wake up. He checked the pulse at her neck and found nothing. His Anamkara was dead. He hadn't saved her. He felt sure that he would, but it hadn't been enough. Did she hit her head? He pushed her wet hair back from her face but found no wounds. Come on, baby. Wake up for me. You've done this before. You can do it. Still nothing. Cormac clutched her against his chest and continued to rock. His lips pulled back in agony and he made silent promises. If Danu would only save her, he'd make amends. He'd be better. He'd do better. Please. 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 He kissed Megan's temple and squeezed her tighter. Then he felt something against his neck. The tiniest flutter, like a butterfly's wings against his skin. He pulled back, and Megan opened her eyes a fraction of an inch. It wasn't a lot, but it was enough. Cormac let out an exhale so strong it nearly turned him inside out. Megan, sweet baby, you scared me. He pulled his knife and slashed at the ropes that still bound her ankles, then he pulled her back into his arms. I'm sorry, Mac. Her voice was weak. You're sorry? I should have never left without you, but you found me. I knew you would. He almost smiled. I had help. Megan's eyebrows raised in question, then a look of panicked understanding spread across her face. Where are they? Are they okay? I don't know. He wished he did. Her expression crumbled, and tears filled her eyes as she tried to sit up.
My uncle, he killed that poor girl. I saw him do it.